Hello and welcome to the Ex-Military Careers Podcast. This series brings together market-leading experts, veterans and ex-military personnel for empowering discussions, conversing topics from diversity to innovation, giving you up-to-date industry insights. EMC is a social enterprise with a mission to support veterans across the UK and the US throughout the entirety of their transition and civilian careers. At Ex-Military Careers, inclusion is the norm, not the exception. I'm your host, Ellis Greenway, ex-Royal Marine Client Engagement Lead here at Ex-Military Careers, part of the Trinovo Group, and this is episode 8. Today we are joined by Olivia Cream and Archita Fritz. Happy listening. Well, Olivia, Archita, thanks for joining us today. Absolute pleasure to have you on. First of all, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick intro into yourselves, I'm sure everyone would love to hear.
Yeah, I guess I'll get us started and I'll punt us over to Archita Ellis. First of all, thank you so much for having us on today. It's quite the honor to join you and your audience on your platform. So really excited to be here speaking with you today. So my name is Olivia Cream. I am a former naval engineer. I was active duty Coast Guard for 8 years. I was a mechanical engineer in the Coast Guard. Absolutely loved it. Had a blast doing counter drugs and migrants down in the Caribbean. And it was probably the best job I've ever had in my entire life. It was absolutely amazing. So out of the Coast Guard, I left. I joined Lucas Group. Lucas Group paired me with my current company that I'm at now. I started in supply chain and then shifted over to HR about 3-4 years into my civilian career journey. And I've been in HR ever since. And outside of my day job, I'm obviously the co-host of the Embrace Only podcast with my co-host Archita here, who will introduce herself in a minute. And the two of us are just so passionate about empowering women, and not just women, anyone who identifies as an only, but obviously both of us are women of color. So we specifically focus on that group and helping that group navigate the corporate space, which could be very, very useful, I think, for the folks on your platform as well. So thanks again for allowing us to join.
Hello, everybody. I am Archita Fritz, and I make the other half of the Embracing Only podcast. So Olivia and I met actually through a Teams chat many moons ago. I watched her video about being an only in the workplace and how she navigated her career being a veteran into civilian life. And that was really motivating. And a chat saying, hey, do you want to connect, turn into this virtual friendship over the past 2 years, which has been amazing. And so I am not from the military or anything of that nature. I've been at a company for 18 years that really was a vehement supporter of veterans in the workplace. So I've had a chance to have a lot of leaders who were ex-military. I'm an electrical engineer by background. I fell in love with marketing many moons ago, and that's what I've done globally in various different capacities in med tech and most recently at the moment in life sciences for the clinical trial space. I'm very passionate about ending the silence of workplace bullying and harassment. This is rife, both, as you know, in the military and all parts of the workplaces. And I work with an organization called Speak Out Revolution, which is based out of the UK. It's a female-founded tech company that uses data from victims who have experienced workplace bullying and harassment to inform changes in workplaces globally. And outside of that, here we are representing the Embracing Only podcast, where, as Olivia said, we're really trying to change the narrative from surviving as an only, whether you're a vet in a workplace, whether you're a woman of color, or you know, in multiple different intersections, to change the narrative from surviving to thriving in the workplace. And we're looking forward to digging in here today with you, Ellis.
Amazing. So thank you both for giving us that introduction. So many topics I know that we've run over and that we want to get stuck into on this. And I think a good natural first place to start is the discussion surrounding the actual transition. So, I mean, Olivia, for yourself, were there any particular highlighted areas during your transition that you found you particularly struggled with?
I mean, how much time do we have? The whole journey, Ellis, is a struggle. And I say that not to discourage anyone that's getting ready to enter into this journey, or even if you've been in this journey for a year or two, the journey is really a struggle. Because I think if you are passionate about your military service, at some point during that service, your identity really becomes closely aligned to your military service. So once you're no longer Lieutenant Grant, which is what I used to be, and you transition, you're now like, okay, who am I? What am I going to be in this new space? What goals do I want to crush? Who's the enemy? Who do I, you know, where do I focus my attention? Things become a lot harder. And I saw a stat the other day that said 2/3 of veterans leave their first company within the first 2 years of getting out of the military. And there's a lot behind that that we can unpack. So I'll take my time here, Ellis, and let you kind of walk us through this. But, you know, I think for the journey itself, here's what I would say. I think in order to be even remotely successful in your journey, there's a mind shift change that needs to happen. It's no longer, let me shut my eyes, keep my head down, and do the mission, and my work will get recognized. That does not exist in the civilian world. If anybody tells you that, it's trash advice. Archita and I have discussed that on so many episodes, so I'll just say it again here. Your work does not speak for itself. Doesn't speak for itself anymore. Now you need to figure out, what do you want to do? Not what can you do, but what do you want to do? What gets you out of bed in the morning? What are you super excited about? And I would take some time, and this is what most veterans don't do, take some time in the beginning to think to yourself, what would make me the most happy? What do I love to do? Do I like to work with my hands? Do I like to talk to people? Do I like to teach? Do I like to read? What do I like to do? And then align yourself with opportunities that enable you to do those things. Forget the title for a second here. Just focus on what it is that you actually like to do, and then back into the jobs from there. I would say that was probably my biggest struggle early on.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and something that I discuss a lot, be it with service leavers, veterans, or, you know, companies and organizations, is a lack of exposure. And that's twofold in terms of actual veterans and service leavers not having the exposure to what they're really capable of, and lots of roles and opportunities that there are out there. And then the exposure on the company side of things to really the talent that is housed within the military, and you know, something that's massively underutilized. So that being said, like, how do you start that breakdown then? So what advice would you give for that service leaver? You know, they're coming from the most secure environment you could almost have. It's pretty hard to get fired from the military, right? And I think what a lot of people do is they treat it like a step. Like, my first step is to get outside the military. I'll complete that first. And then, you know, it might not be for me, but I'll work on after that. So, you know, what's the best way to bridge that gap between getting outside and that being the goal to actually finding a good place of work where you feel valued, that you enjoy, straight off the bat, and missing out these multiple roles, which is, like you said, a stat that's so relevant, so prevalent inside in a minute. So how do we skip that?
Yeah, I kind of want Archita's thoughts, because I mean, I have, yeah. I could go forever on this topic, but I think as a business leader, Archita sees a lot of veterans come through the civilian space. So I'm going to punt to her first and see her thoughts.
No, absolutely. And listen, I'm just going to like put another caveat to all the listeners. I am not from the military. So my experiences are not like, you know, self-driven, but from what I have seen and helped engage with other onlys in the corporate workspace itself. But one of the things I would say is, I heard this a lot from veterans who join in, is you've got to get ready for battle right from the start. So the job hunt itself is going to be getting ready for battle. You can't assume that that's going to be the easy part. That's probably going to be the hardest part, because you can get demotivated numerous times because you may be looking for some kind of playbook that you're used to seeing in the military, that you expect in the military, but there isn't a specific playbook. But there are certain aspects of strengths that you have learned in the military, like setting short-term and long-term goals, that you could potentially lean into. So think strategically, like just as you're looking to approach battle, like I would again, not speaking from experience, but what I see in the movies and others, right? Mm-hmm. So very different. But I would say that when I speak to them, is look at your job hunt process as the beginning and the key part of your battle. Because if you find the right organization that embraces your onlyness in all its aspects, because as you're trying to transition in, supports you within it and set short-term and long-term goals, that would be really, really great. I will add one more thing here. There are a few other steps here, but one of a very basic, tangible thing, look at your social media profiles. And I say this to so many folks I engage with is, and clean it up. Really clean it up for the professional world, because the language, the logos, while they really matter and form a significant part of your identity, to a recruiter, this means nothing. So mm-hmm. putting that like in your LinkedIn headline, et cetera, may mean nothing, but how do you translate it into the language of, okay, in order to become a lieutenant, I had to be competent in A, B, C, D, E, articulate that for the mm-hmm. civilian world. And the same in like your initial pitches to recruiters or executive recruiters, speak yeah. the language of, try to learn how to speak the language of the civilian world while talking about your strengths versus mm-hmm. how you would communicate to your leader in your environment to ask about that next opportunity, or not ask, I guess you'd be given that next opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I will say is network. You'll be surprised how you can, your network can really come in to support you in numerous different ways. So really engage with your network, whether it be on places like LinkedIn, et cetera. But I focus my response primarily on that initial part, because that sometimes mm-hmm. is the hardest to get over versus while you're in the company itself. But I'll pitch it back here, Ellis, to yourself or Olivia.
Yeah, no, I think you really nailed it there. And networking, you know, if I can advise my friends on a personal level who are going to go through their own transition, if I could give them one thing to do, it would be to get on LinkedIn and start networking. Just the exposure to the whole world, the people you meet, the willingness for people to help, especially in the veteran community as well, where everyone is so friendly. You know, the amount of networking I've done since my role here at Ex-Military Careers has been amazing. So yeah, I think that's a great tip. So that loss of identity is absolutely one huge thing to combat. And I think having the internal setup ready is just as important on the business side of things. You know, the recruitment of military is one thing, but to be a business setup to retain is another. And a lot of that comes down to a leadership style as well. And this is something that we've touched on. And the differences in leadership between the military world and the corporate world, whether that's, you know, from a command and control aspect to more of a trusting ideal or a trusting kind of basis on which that works. But keen to hear thoughts on from yourselves about the difference between that and what you think works, whether it's within the business, and, you know, is it even right for the military and the corporate world to be that different?
Oh, this is a topic that I just love, Ellis. And I'll give you the cliff notes of this story. I tell the story all the time, so anybody that follows me has probably heard it. But when I left the military, I approach my job in the civilian world the same way I did in the military. It was go fast, plan, fail fast, get up, dust yourself off, keep it moving, right? And I think when I was in the military, kind of the first thing you get taught to do as a leader in the military is assess your battlefield, right? So you assess your battlefield and you come up with a battle plan for success based on the criteria. Well, the civilian world is just a battlefield, right? It's a different field, but it's a battlefield nonetheless. And I think when you assess the space, what a lot of veterans struggle with is how we leave people feeling that work with us. This is very important. I'm going to say this again. It is now important how you make people feel. It used to not be important. Mm-hmm. We used to not acknowledge feelings. As a matter of fact, I used to be one of the ones to make fun of you for excessive feelings. Now it is a very, very important part of your success. And there's been many books written about why veterans tend to turn over so often in their first, you know, couple years out of the military. And it's because monitoring how we're leaving people feeling that work with us is never something that we are told to consider. It is now a major, major part of your success. So early in my career, a leader at my job saw something in me and decided to pull me aside and give me some feedback. And his feedback was that I was accomplishing the mission, but I was leaving body bags. And at that time in my career, it was more like, get on the bus or get run over by it. I don't care which, but this is getting done. The mission is getting accomplished. You cannot operate like that. Let me be the first to tell you, you now have to be very, very mindful, because all of your little interactions with folks are now creating a corporate brand for you. And that corporate brand will follow you everywhere you go, because civilians tend to ask around, who is Ellis? What's his work style like? Is it pleasant to work with him? Nobody wants somebody on their team that's going to be hard to work with, no matter how good you are at your job. So that is the single best piece of advice I can give you in terms of your leadership style. Anything outside of that you can figure out, You have to be nice to people.
Yeah.
Get the mission done, but be mindful of how you treat people.
Yeah, it's hearts and minds, isn't it? And Archita, from your perspective, I guess, having exposure to veterans and their leadership styles, are there any particular points in it that you find have worked really successfully that isn't necessarily always brought from a civilian background as well?
Yeah, can I first share something to what Olivia said, and then I will answer this question, Alice, really quick. So I was just looking at some numbers this morning on our Speak Out dashboard, and 100% of veterans or military, ex-military, who submitted their feedback to our dashboard said that the number one reason they were bullied or harassed in the workplace was gaslighting. 100%. Wow. So can you imagine, you have all these veterans entering into the workplace at some point in time, they've constantly felt these microaggressions. They probably lead through that, like, you know, in different ways, like aggressing people in different ways, unbeknownst to them. And so there's this unconscious bias of how they get things done as they step into the workplace. So if you are aware of that, and if you can develop like a group or team or someone around you to check yourself when you get into the workplace, then you'll save yourself from wrecking yourself like a lot sooner. And the reason I share this is because very early on in my career, I had unfortunately a not so good experience with ex-veteran, and it kind of really turned me off for a long time until I met some amazing leaders, and I'll explain the amazing part here in a second. And the not so amazing part was I was lower in rank, right? So I was a marketing associate, but I was sitting in a team and he was the project leader. And everyone was like, Archita, you know, he's ex-military, he's to the point, he's super direct. Do not interrupt him. Do not bring a problem that is an issue or whatever. So they were already setting me up for like almost not speaking my mind if I saw a problem, right? Because they were just really cautious around the leader. But me being me, I was like, no, I see a problem. I'm going to raise it, because if we don't, it's going to impact our product. So I raised my hand and I was like, Ted, we have a problem. He yelled at me. He just yelled. He went, lost his mind. He just went like, I can't believe you would interrupt me to share this problem, blah, blah, blah. My manager sat next to me, mouth wide open, not saying anything. And I looked at him and I was like, Jeff, what the heck? You need to say something. And it was bizarre, because in that moment, there was like this hierarchical structure that suddenly kind of came to be that didn't exist. So I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to take my manager. I'm going to go to this. I'm going to help this person be right for the organization, because I think they're great. But screaming at me is, and I'm way below in the ranks of everything, but this is not the way to respond. So we actually sat down and then we had a great conversation. I had my manager next to me and I said, I felt A, B, C, D, E, this is not appropriate. So going to the feelings, they matter, because what you say and how you say it impacts the civilians and how they're motivated to go do things versus what might be different, because your mission is not the same as my mission when I'm sitting at that meeting. I'm at that meeting to ensure this product in that meeting was available globally. He was at that meeting to deliver that project on time. That's it. He didn't want to listen to anything else. And that is one of the biggest lessons, I think. And we built one of the best relationships after that for years. And we just had one-on-ones. We talked through how we see things differently and why it matters. But I would say that is the key thing, is as a veteran stepping into the civilian world in these meetings, is understanding is, surprisingly, even though the mission of the company is the same, your mission in many different rooms and tables you sit at is going to look very different from every single person possibly at that table. Even though at the end of the day, we're there to delight the customer, that customer may even look different. So be aware of that. So that would be one of the things. It was a long-winded answer, but I get to the side, but I really wanted to share that as like a feedback to what Olivia said. Absolutely. From a positive perspective, I would just say leadership. Geez, like I've had some of the best leaders who have come from military. The clarity in which they lead is something that is almost unparalleled to what I see in like my other civilian leaders. So the clarity and integrity of leadership is what I would kind of summarize as what I received from my veteran leaders who have led me in my role in my company so far.
Got you. And I think that's a really interesting point, actually, to, you know, that story. And I'd be really interested to see if in his previous career in the military, if he'd have had that chat with you then, if he would have been more successful in the military as well. Because poor leadership is poor leadership. And I would argue that his style, even though it was very military, kind of a, like you would assume that's very military.
My bias. Yeah.
Yeah. I would argue that still wouldn't be very effective because, you know, so much of it comes down to your trust in a leader. At the end of the day, if you're putting your life in their hands and their decisions, you want to know that they're, you know, level-headed, that they can weigh things up without emotion. But if, you know, if someone can react very like aggressively and emotionally to something as small as that, how are they going to react to other triggers? So I think that would have been probably a really interesting outcome that we'll never get to learn, unfortunately. But moving on to, I guess this almost ties in actually with what you said, so the leadership and then into the bullying space. And it all links quite nicely, actually, because there's another element to the military world, which you almost experience, which is, you know, having the moral courage to stand up for things. So, you know, in that instance where you've got people like your manager at the time, you know, who should have had that moral courage to say, yes, if this was a rank structure, you're above me, but to be able to kind of put the foot down and say, you know, this is wrong. And look at the effect that happened after, you know, a positive outcome. So have you got any recommendations to what you would say to veterans or anyone in the workplace who are suffering from these microaggressions and, you know, any kind of sidelining and how to deal with that, one in themselves, but then I guess two in the business to take it forward and try and fix it?
So let me punt it to Miss Olivia first, because she helped guide me through some of my own experiences and I'll share some on top of that. But Olivia, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ellis, here's what I would say. I think in order to be okay in that shift to the civilian world, you have to know who you are. Because if you're comfortable in your skin, you know what you're capable of, you know what you're good at, you know what maybe your opportunities are, then no one can really define who you are for you. Does that make sense? And some of the things that make veterans successful in everything that we do, companies are looking for, and I'll run down a little bit of a list as I did some research on this. You know, when companies are recruiting veterans, they're looking for teamwork. They're looking for discipline. They're looking for the ability to work under pressure. They're looking for leadership skills. They're looking for problem solving skills. They're looking for an ability to adapt. Who does that sound like? That's us, right? That is us. So even though you are going to face these microaggressions, I'm not going to lie to you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen because you're different. You're entering a space that's different. You will face those things. Do not let those things define you. Instead, you pick a journey that you want to go on. So you start with the end in mind. And I coach veterans, please, for the love of God, we are not used to talking about money or focusing on our salaries. You need to make that now. Mission number one. Mission number one is how much money do I need to live comfortably? It breaks my heart to see our brothers and sisters come out of the military and end up in these situations where they're not making ends meet. They're working 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs. I'm telling you, it is not necessary. But you have to come out and set your mind to a place where you know, okay, I need to make $100,000 a year to live comfortably in whatever situation I need to live in. And then you go out and you filter your job prospects through that filter so that you don't end up in the homeless shelter. I'm very, very serious about this. Start with the money in mind and then back into the jobs that give you the flexibility or give you the type of structure in your life that you need. Do you want to travel? Do you want to stay put? Do you want to relocate? Do you want to be out in the field? Do you want to be behind a desk? These are very important things for you to define for yourself. And then once you have defined those things for yourself, go out and live your life and don't let anybody tell you who you are. You know who you are. Just go out there and live.
Yeah, such a good point. Amazing advice. And then you see how easily that ties into what we first discussed, which is that loss of identity. So it's, you know, you've got to find out who you are, but you're losing your whole identity and you've got to navigate this path. And it's such a difficult one and it's never going to be easy. There's always hurdles. I think that advice definitely goes a long way and ties in with what I say a lot to on all sides of things, that service leavers don't really know what they want to do. So you've got to approach the recruitment of them very differently. You know, if you're a company looking for a niche role to fill, but you want a veteran to fill it, they're not just going to stumble across that. You need to show how, like, because these are what veterans are filtering for, right? You know, I'm not necessarily looking to come out and fill this very niche role. I want to make X amount of money. I want to be back with my family. I want to have more say in my own life. And then they will find something that fits that. They'll find a skill that fits that and they'll learn it. So that's why the recruitment piece is very different on that side of things. But Archita, I think you wanted to weigh in on after Olivia. So is there anything you'd like to add on?
Yeah, just a couple of things I would say is one, I think Olivia alluded to this, was in the military, it's a lot about teamwork, right? And what you really need to understand is in order to armor yourself from the microaggressions of the civilian world in the corporate space is put yourself first. This is going to be really hard to do. But everything from like your elevator pitch in your job hunt, all the way to asking for the promotion, asking for the pay raise, standing up against your quote unquote bully, you probably didn't do this, or you probably didn't know the right way to do it, or whatever it might be. Like, how is your grievance going to be handled? Is my whole career, my whole identity going to blow up if I'm going to speak up? And while you might still struggle with that, while I never worked, of course, in the military, I never like served in the military is the right word, right? Serve in the military. I was at one company for 18 years and I loved working there, which was kind of my identity. And so what was crazy was when you felt these microaggressions, you kind of pushed it aside because you're like, okay, you know, it'll be fine. It'll be better. But you are your best and the only advocate. Like, that is one thing you really have to understand. And once you really understand that, you've got to take what Olivia and I say, kill the freaking fear. You really need to kill the fear, whether it be fear of like my superior, fear of like, oh, I just started my career in the corporate space or in the civilian world. What is this going to look like? But if it is not serving you well as an individual, speak up. And if you're not sure how best to speak up, engage with people you trust. So build that trusted like network or whatever. A lot of companies have veteran employee resource groups. Really engage with them. Don't be like, oh, it's a cult, it's a club. No, seriously, like go step in. It's a safe space. Utilize that safe space for your ability to thrive in that workplace, because they will really help you navigate the complications of the civilian world. So put yourself first and then find those groups that can help you thrive within that workplace to help navigate these microaggressions.
Yeah, great advice. And it comes back to, you know, more things that we've discussed, such as the networking piece. But one thing I know that we did really want to touch on is controlling the controllables. I know that you definitely want to weigh on this. So I'll pass this one back over to you just to talk to us about what the controllables are and how we control them.
Yeah, I know. Archie's was like, I'm just going to let Olivia go on this one because it's always my hot button. Always. Here's the deal. I think when you get out of the military, you realize that there are more things out of your control than you would like, right? Mm-hmm. I think we all have a little bit of that, especially if you were an officer or if you were a platoon leader, if you were a leader in any sense in the military, it's very important for you to control things, because back in the military, if you didn't control it well, someone would likely die, right? So there's this inherent fear in not controlling all the pieces of the puzzle around you, specifically for military leaders. Let me just tell you, when you get out into the civilian world, there is so little that you can control. Like, your environment is just so volatile. You know what I mean? But What I encourage veterans to do is stop focusing on all the crap that you can't control. There are only a few key things that you can control, but they make all the difference. You control your mental state, whether you show up cranky or you show up positive and curious and, you know, wanting to learn more, you control that. You control the direction of your career. People come out and think, oh, my boss controls my career, because to some extent, that's what it was like in the military. Whether you get, you know, the nod to make it to the next rank or not, especially in the officer world, you know, you need to make sure that your boss has your back. Well, in the civilian world, your boss may have your back, your boss may not have your back, but it doesn't matter because they don't fully control your fate. There are lots of things that you can do to control your path, irrespective of whether your boss is a knucklehead or not, right? And you need to know where the what it is that you want. As long as you know what it is that you want and you stay aligned to that, the rest of it is noise, right? Now, that means that you need to know what you want. You need to know the people that can help you get what you want. You need to go make friends with them, which is not necessarily intuitive for us, right? We're typically like, I need to sit in a corner and come up with the plan and then go out and execute. No, no, no. To survive in the corporate space is a team sport. You better go make yourself some friends. And if you're anything like me and you're an introvert, you need to be very, very intentional about the people that you go make friends with. Okay. But it is absolutely critical to your success that you align yourself with the people that can help you get to where you want to go, and that you ignore all of the distractions that are going to tug and push and pull you in different directions, and stay aligned to your personal mission. Please, please, please figure out your personal mission and do not bail on it.
Yeah. And it's really tough, isn't it? Because that inherently goes over everything that's been ingrained in you, in that, you know, whoever's shoulder to shoulder with you, that you're going to do anything to keep them safe, and that's putting yourself on the line from it. So taking yourself from that headspace to being selfish, which is what we it's selfish is almost a dirty word, isn't it? Like it's seen so negatively, but absolutely you should be selfish in your career, because, you know, no one else is going to get you to where you want to be. It comes down to you. So, you know, that selfishness, although it goes against everything that we know and that we love, it's accepting that, and that it's not actually a negative thing, but it's a positive thing if you can achieve that mindset around it.
100%. And I'll share a quick story, and then Archita, I'll kick it over to you because I see you taking a breath here. So my husband left the Coast Guard. He retired from the Coast Guard as a Master Chief. Okay, so you guys can probably think about what kind of personality my husband has when he left the Coast Guard as a Master Chief. So he gets out of the military and he starts working for this particular company that loves his technical ability, right? They recognize him all the time. He gets great emails, you know, great attaboys, because he can basically fix anything. He is a technical expert. Okay. I am jumping up and down in the corner, flipping out, because they are paying him squat. They are paying him much lower under what I know is industry standard for pay. But my husband is so flattered by all the recognition and the frivolity of some of the attaboys, right? He feels like now he's actually appreciated and someone is recognizing him for his good work. But what he doesn't realize is that the tangible recognition, i.e., are they paying you your value, was not being achieved. So fast forward a couple months, you know, things continue on, and some of the frivolous recognition is starting to lose its appeal at this point. And then finally, my husband, around about the year mark, gets to the point where he's like, I feel like I probably need to make a change. Things aren't going well in the company. It's starting to fall apart a little bit. And I'm like, okay, good that you recognize this. He goes out, he gets on the job search again. He gets offered a significantly better opportunity. I want to say it was like a $25,000 increase in salary, playing roughly in the same space. Okay, so that goes to show you how much he was undervalued by this company. Now they circle back, and what do you think they do to him? No, 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 don't leave. You're awesome. You're the best person that we have. We're going to give you a compensation bump. And they verbally offer him this increase in pay. Ellis, 6 months goes by, and my husband never sees this increased compensation. So he turns down this better job opportunity because he feels loyal to these people that gave him his first shot out of the military. So he feels loyal, right? That's how us veterans are wired. Yep. He takes them at their word, loses out on a $25,000 compensation increase and better work environment, frankly, because he feels loyal to this company that never ends up paying him. Mm-hmm. That is an example of what happens out in these streets. So yeah. I beg you to please take care of yourself.
Yeah, no, that resonates with me absolutely. And if something that I had to, or was forced to learn very quickly, that I've come from an environment where I inherently trust everyone around me. It's the backbone of what we do and everything that we're trying to achieve. And then I was very naive going into the workspace in that translated over and it just didn't. And I learned that the hard way. But, you know, it's a shame that that's so common. But yeah, no, Archita, if you wanted to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I mean, she hit on a few different points. I would say I would almost summarize it to say, one, we kind of not sort of joked on this on our last episode, which was don't let Jesus take the wheel. You take the wheel of your career, like seriously. And I love that country song, by the way. But you take the wheel of your career and then bring people along for the ride. Like, don't let them occupy that seat just because they have a specific title. Because they're a manager, they have to be the one helping you in your journey. Because they are, I don't know, someone higher up in the organization or whatever, you give let them earn the right to help shape your career. So you are controlling that versus hoping and wishing on a prayer that someone's going to kind of help you along that journey. The other piece I was going to say was, again, going back to the job hunt, and the reason I go back to this so much is because if you pick the wrong place, you get into this challenge that, you know, Olivia's like husband kind of fell into because of that sense of loyalty, right? Because you feel like you owe the company something. And I really want to shout it out loud to the people in the back. You owe no company anything. You owe them nothing, just as much as they don't owe you anything. Because this is what I've also seen is I've seen a lot of veterans in a company for years, 20 years, 20 plus years. And they're like, and then suddenly they're let go, like overnight, right? And they're like, oh my God, like all of this work, everything I gave the company, blood, sweat and tears, what was it worth, right? And again, being who they are and how they've been raised per se, they put their head down and they're like, fine, this was the outcome. I'm going to kind of charge forward and move on. But if you have the mentality of like control what you can control and they don't owe you anything as much as you don't owe them anything, then you're constantly making choices that are right for you, right for your family, right for your mental health, whatever it might be. So research that company at the start. As much as they're going to interview you, you owe interviewing them. Network with people within the company, veterans within the company, to understand what is this environment I'm stepping into. Recently, I was approached by an executive recruiter because, you know, you're constantly getting pinged like, oh, join this, you know, would you be interested in this job? I went onto their website. I didn't see a single person of color. And I'm just like, for like their leadership. And I'm just like, well, sure, I could be the only, the first, the whatever. But come on, like, this is 2022. Like, and I'm not just saying people of color, but how are you not more diverse than just a bunch of middle-aged white men or really young millennial white men who are leading another startup or a, you know, venture capital. So as you're stepping into like large organizations, mid-sized organizations, even as a veteran, while maybe you may not see many other veterans, think about how are they engaging with the onlys in their workplace? How are they promoting the onlys in their workplace? How are they making space for onlys in their workplace? And LinkedIn is a great place. Are the onlys verbal about their experiences in the workplace on LinkedIn? The minute you start seeing the onlys only talk about like, oh, I was at this event, this is amazing, you know that this is garbage. Like, it's absolute garbage because they cannot bring different aspects of themselves, because then that will stifle veterans coming into the workplace because they can't share other aspects of themselves. So do your research as much as you'd expect the company to like, so interview them as much as you'd expect them to interview you as well.
Got you. Yeah, no, spot on, I agree. So what I'd like to do, or ask you to do, as we're starting to round up, is if we could go into a hypothetical situation, and this may include what we've discussed, it may not, always rewind to speaking to me a year ago when I was looking at my transition. If you could give me 30 seconds of advice from either of you, or both of you rather, what would it be?
30 seconds of advice. One, do you know how much money you want to make? Two, do you know where you want to live? And are you open to travel or not? Those are the two things I want you to define for yourself. Now that you know those things, I think you should get on your job boards. I personally like a guide at this point in my life. And so I would encourage you to join a headhunter. I don't know what the UK headhunter groups are, but like if you're stateside, like an Orion, like a Lucas group, because what those companies are going to do is when you tell them what it is you're looking for, they are going to match you with potential opportunities that meet your criteria. So for me, efficiency is golden. Always. Like I want things done and I want them done quickly. The quickest way to get the best possible opportunities is to get someone to help you match what it is that you want with what's open out in the industry. So I highly encourage you to do that, but start with the money first and do not lowball yourself.
Perfect. Archita?
My 30 seconds would kind of go back to get ready for battle. Right. So alluding to what Olivia said, really understand the battlefield you're getting into. Demilitarize yourself if you need to. Understand what that process looks like. Focus on yourself. But then the second piece would be is once you're ready for battle, find your community while you're in battle. So you're in the job. Find that community, whether it be LinkedIn groups, ex-military careers. You know, you're a group that helps. It's a safe space where you find opportunities, etc. But find your community, because while getting the job is half the battle, thriving in the job is what's needed, because you want to pull other people from the military up behind you into these positions, into these places, just as much as the opportunities you got as you stepped into the civilian world. So identify what it is that you're going to need to thrive in this space once you come in. And the best advice I could give that is find that community where you're at, whether in the UK, in the US, across all these different platforms.
Great advice. Absolutely love that. Just before we, I guess, round off and close up, is there any final thoughts to take to the floor or any kind of little bits that you want to put in there just to round us off?
I mean, I think Olivia and I said this a bunch of times, but I'll say this to Olivia, please add here, but control the controllables, kill the fear of stepping into this space. You've done this extremely successfully in places where there were way higher stakes. And don't feel like everything is urgent as well, because I literally have to tell my team sometimes, is someone going to die? No, then do not stress yourself out or create that anxiety. So control the controllables, kill the fear. Olivia, these are like Olivia's coin terms. So I'm hashtagging Olivia.
I love it because I feel like I've infected you over the years.
Yes, all in my body. Right, sir.
So the inflated sense of urgency, Ellis, is a big one. And I will leave everyone with this. So I don't know if you can see this, but I have a tattoo on my wrist. It's my sea service medal. And I got it tattooed on my wrist to close out my military chapter. And it serves as a reminder, because we're still hardwired with that extreme sense of urgency in the civilian world that will cause burnout. Everything is urgent. And if everything is urgent, nothing is urgent. Okay. So I did that for myself to remind myself what Archita was saying. No one's dying. The boat's not on fire. We're not all drowning. Like, we're not getting shot at. It's fine if it has to happen tomorrow. So I leave everyone with everything that Archita just said. It's going to be scary. Don't worry about it. You're battle tested. You're prepared for this journey. Know what you want. Ignore the noise, stay on your path, ignore the noise, and don't let yourself burn out. And for anyone that is in the corporate space right now that you find yourself as an only, we also encourage you to join our community over on Embracing Only as well, where we talk a lot about these topics, not specific to military, even though we have some military things that trickle in. But we talk about some common themes and we share some good models for how to navigate the corporate space if anyone is looking for additional support.
Perfect. Amazing. You beat me to it. I was just about to say, please go and check Archita and Olivia out and what they're doing with Embracing Only. Listen to a few myself. Really, really insightful, as I hope this was for everyone. But just to round off, thank you to you both for coming on. Really enjoyed that. And I'm sure we'll get another one again in the near future.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to Olivia and Archita for joining us for yet another insightful podcast episode discussing tackling leadership in the military versus the corporate world, as well as the importance of thriving in the workplace and not simply surviving. As mentioned, please check out their podcast, Embracing Only, for more insightful tips. EMC is a social enterprise with a mission to support veterans across the UK and the US throughout the entirety of their transition to civilian careers. Their ex-military careers inclusion is the norm, not the exception. If you would like to discuss strategies on how you can build diverse teams or are interested in having a conversation regarding the current job market, please do reach out to us or visit our website at www.exmilitarycareers.com. If you stand behind inclusion and represent the society we live in, partner with us today. For now, stay connected and we'll speak to you soon.